So, welcome to Things That Go Bump in the Night. This is JC Bratton recording live from IMP Studios in Paramus, New Jersey. It's been a while since I've recorded a new episode of Things That Go Bump in the Night, but today's show is going to be really awesome. There will be two parts. I will have Ellen Coe from Floor 5 Theater Company here to talk about the making of Things That Go Bump in the Night, the pod dramas, which were released in October of last year. And then also, I'm going to read for you the prologue to the direct sequel of my first short story, Who's at the Door? The follow-up is called Who's Back at the Door? But first, let me give you some updates. So when I wrote the three short stories that make up Things That Go Bump in the Night, the ultimate goal was to land some sort of movie deal. In speaking with friends and colleagues, the story that seemed to have the best chance as a movie is Who's at the Door? So I decided to take the prologue and turn it into a short teaser. It's received rave reviews. I have submitted it to a number of film festivals. The Filmocracy Film Market accepted the teaser, and it landed me a potential distributor once I have a final film made. You can review my reel at filmfreeway.com/JC Bratton. But I do have some breaking news as of this morning. The teaser that I created for Who's at the Door was accepted to the First Scene Short Film Screenplay Festival. And this will give me an audience feedback once it's screened, so it's very, very exciting. So again, lots happening. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and now introduce you to Ellen Coe. So Ellen, she has been, you know, we've actually known each other for a very long time. She's the voice of a number of characters in the Things That Go Bump in the Night pod dramas, including Alex Anderson from Parasomnia. So Ellen, welcome to my podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me, JC.
All right, great. So I have a series of questions. So the first one is, give us a little bit of background about yourself. I know that, you know, at one point you were a full-time Googler, but then you got bitten by the acting bug. So tell us all about that.
Yeah, well, I have had a lot of different paths in my life. I was very creative all through my youth. My undergrad degree was in dance performance. And I always loved the theater. I loved acting, being on stage, all of that. But life drew me into the corporate world. I started out doing nonprofits, and then from nonprofits, I went into tech, and then from tech, I got into the corporate side, and it was really great. I mean, we had a great time, and eventually, though, I felt like something was missing, and it was that creative outlet, that kind of nourishment that creativity allows. So I started doing some improv on the weekends and in the evenings, and my improv mentor suggested that I go to acting school. But when I heard other people talk about acting school, it sounded like my ultimate personal torture, because it's about crying and having breakdowns and dredging up all your old unhealed traumas. And I was like, no, thank you very much. But I noticed there were some kids in the building I worked in. And this is the Google building between 8th and 9th Avenue. And there were these kids that would be around in the lobby waiting for the elevator with everyone else. And they always seemed so alive. They'd be holding their yoga mats and they'd be chattering amongst themselves with the most excitement. And I was like, that is what I'm looking for. And it turns out they were all acting school students. So I investigated a little bit, and their acting school is Atlantic, the Atlantic Acting School. And their approach there is very different than like the typical, method version of acting. And so I was like, I'm going to go for it. And I auditioned and I got in, and I went for it. And it's totally changed my life since then.
What got you interested, though, in bringing some of my stories to life? Because I know that, you know, you and I, of course, we've connected over the years, even, you know, being coast to coast away from each other. But, you know, you learned that I was doing a series of short stories. So tell me again, it came from an Instagram post, right?
Yeah, you know, back when I knew you, when we were living in the same town, I didn't know that you had this creative writing side to you. So I was very intrigued when I saw you've been publishing these books. And so I gave them a read and I was like, ooh, there's something here. Like, there's something really juicy, like intriguing. And I wanted to bring it to life. So, you know, I have partners at 4-5 Theater Company. I'm the artistic director. And so I was like, hey, we had just finished producing another podcast called Algorithm by Elisa Zulina. And that was something that we did because of the pandemic. We were set to do a live stage production, but then with the shutdown, we pivoted. And so we gave audio drama a try, and I think it was pretty successful. So then I was like, let's do another one. This is great. We can have our actors around the country recording from home, and it can all come together, and we can still tell stories even when we're apart.
Yeah, exactly. And it was wonderful. And so when you came up with this idea, you know, given that, you know, you had Algorithm, but then, you know, pandemic's still continuing. And so now pitching this to the members of Floor 5, or at least the, you know, the core team. So how did that go? How did you go in and kind of draw them in to be able to create these pod dramas?
So I said, hey, I talked to you and let you know what I was thinking. I got them a copy of the books, and it sold itself, really. Like, it wasn't a lot of convincing to do. It was just like, yes, let's do it. This is fun. It's a new genre for us. I think people are already kind of hoping for roles, like right off, as soon as people were reading it. And so it was very easy to get people on board, and there was so much enthusiasm. It was really kind of like, yeah, let's, as soon as they read it, they're like, yeah, let's do it. Let's go.
And that's great. That's really great. And then, so when we created these pod dramas, and, you know, again, there's three different stories. The one story that's really at a personal level for me is Parasomnia. Now, you actually were the actor for the main character, Alex Anderson, and I think you did a spot on job. So how do you actually prepare for that character? I'm really curious.
When I read that story, already in my mind, I was like, this is the role that I want. And part of it was from knowing you and having talked to you about the story, knowing how personal it is. And it's so apparent how personal it is. In acting, we talk a lot about vulnerability and putting yourself out there. And I could just feel that coming off the page. So to prepare for that, I think our conversations were absolutely helpful. And for myself, you know, I actually identify a lot with Alex as well. And I think part of being human is experiencing loss. And so I had to dip into my own loss and remember how that feels and be willing to bring it to, I guess, to the microphone. And just, it takes a little bravery too to put yourself out there like that.
In addition, of course, to the voice acting, you also served as director, or at least directing the voice actors. And so, of which I believe Dollhouse was the story that you had directed. So, what became your vision of that story? Because you had to read it first, get kind of acclimated with it. So, kind of what was your vision going into it?
Yeah, so right away I thought of my friend for the dolls, and I wanted kind of like a real separation between contemporary everyday life, down to earth normal people, with the supernatural, creepy, strangeness. I think there was the strangeness that really appealed to me. And so I just wanted a lot of contrast there between the interruption of, like, here's people you know, living their lives, and then like this interjection of these foreign objects.
So actually, then thinking about it and looking at the three different stories, so which one was your favorite and why?
So this is going to sound so biased, but it was Parasomnia right from the start. I absolutely enjoy all three stories, and I do, like, each one has a special place in my heart, but Parasomnia, just, there's so many things that I identify between me and Alex, the idea of like the perfect man and the dream versus waking, and that kind of, there's kind of like a liminal state, like the in-between and crossing over. That's very much related to the work I do as a theater teacher. Like that dream state is kind of like what I do with students in Neutral Mask. And so I just was vibing on all of these ideas. And also I like the element of healing that it holds and recovery.
Like I said, my personal opinion, I really like Parasomnia the best of all of them. Outside of, you know, helping me with my stories, you've done a lot of great sketch comedies and have appeared in a few shorts. And by the way, I love Sandwich the best. I thought it was really awesome. So do you see yourself ever acting like in a major motion picture, or do you want to stay sort of in the short film / indie type of area?
You know, I would never turn a great opportunity down. To be honest, I'm not as ambitious as I think one might need to be to do the whole studio Hollywood scene. And I don't know why. Like, most of the projects I do are people I know, people I've worked with before, people who call me back. It's projects that I just feel connected to versus a random, I audition for something and I, you know, I don't know what, you know, I guess I could submit more. I'm like barely submitting, to be honest, and somehow I'm staying busy. But it's just not, at this moment, it's not my goal. Like I work with other actors who, they have a dream and they're very clear on the dream, and I'm kind of more meandering, to be honest. I'm here to kind of fulfill and entertain myself more than hit any goals.
Sure. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, what you enjoy doing, right? And not, you know, feeling necessarily any pressure to do anything other than what you enjoy, I think. So yeah, that's great. That's great. And one other thing is that, you know, you also teach part-time at NYU, and which is really great. And so I'm kind of curious, what kind of advice would you give to sort of the young actors out there who are just kind of up and comers wanting to get into the industry? What's some advice you would give them?
I have so much advice for young actors. And I think the main thing is that you need to focus on having a good life. Before you can do anything else, you need to have your foundation in place, which is your health, your relationships, your mental and emotional well-being. Because you could have all the success in the world, you could have all the money in the world, fame, all these things that people chase after, and if you don't have those core needs of, I guess, wellness, health, relationships, that kind of thing, all of that will just leave you feeling empty still. So make sure you're taking care of yourself. Make sure you're doing what you love, not just what you think other people think you should be doing, or meeting some idea of what you should be doing from last week or 3 years ago. You have to stay true to who you are now.
Exactly. So really, really great advice. Thank you, Ellen. And so thank you again for being my guest on this episode. Now, of course, as I mentioned, there's one more piece, which is going to be like an exclusive world premiere here. So, you know, I've been working on the direct sequel to Who's at the Door. A number of people have been asking, like, what happened to Jamie? We need to know what's going on. So the title is called Who's Back at the Door, and it's premiering on this very podcast. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the prologue. And but let me first recap a little bit of what happened at Who's at the Door. So Who's at the Door, short story where there was a young person named Jamie Patterson, 18 years old, well, 17 going on 18 years old. She got into a really bad car accident because she saw something or someone in the backseat of her car, really freaked her out. She got into this accident. She got left into a walking boot. And then her parents wanted to go to Hawaii, but she couldn't join them because she was in her walking boot. And during this time period, she and her ex-boyfriend, Mark, he comes over to kind of keep her company. And then they find out that there's a girl, a 13-year-old girl named Mary Montgomery, who had gone missing. And turns out Jamie feels that Mary Montgomery is the girl that she saw in her car the night of the accident. And it leads to this big story about urban legends, leads to a story about Bloody Mary, the urban legend where you say Bloody Mary three times to a mirror and then Bloody Mary appears and then she'll grab you out of the mirror. And so in the story, what ends up happening, and spoilers, so please, if you hadn't read this before, please read the story first. But anyway, what ends up happening at the end is that, they were able to kind of defeat, quote unquote, a Bloody Mary, and all seemed to go well. Mark and Jamie got back together again. Mark is attending college over at Caltech. Jamie's attending college at Ohio State University, and they go on a video call together, and everything's really cute. But what they don't realize is that it's 3:33 p.m. Eastern time, and Jamie's getting ready to leave the dorm room. And then all of a sudden, when she looks in her mirror, Bloody Mary's right there. And that's because they thought they had, solved the mystery of Bloody Mary. But what they didn't realize was that back when Jamie and Mark were doing a graduation party at their friend Shelly's house, what had happened was Shelly, Mark, and a few of their friends went in and played the Bloody Mary game that night. And when they did that, they opened another portal for Bloody Mary to get through, which was that mirror that was in Jamie's dorm room. So that's kind of where I leave it off. And so now we got to figure out what happened next. So I'm going to go ahead and read the prologue to Who's Back at the Door. I'm doing it very old school. I have a paper copy here. So I'm going to go ahead and start it right now. And I love your feedback,
I'm
Ellen.
I'm so excited for this.
All right. So prologue, the Ohio State University campus, October 3rd, 2017. So that is the same day in which Jamie had disappeared. Jamie and Mark got back together again. Shelley Patel rolled her eyes as she took a sip of her latte. Chatter filled the local campus Starbucks, but Shelley and her friend Steve were still able to make conversation. I still don't understand what Jamie was so upset about. I mean, Mark is like the most devoted boyfriend ever. Shelley's tone was a bit somber. Do I sense a bit of jealousy? Steve asked as he ate his croissant. No, Jamie is my girl. Chicks, before Shelley could complete her sentence, a loud crackle of thunder sounded. Shoot, I need to get back. Shelley jumped out of her chair and picked up her backpack. I'll see you tonight? Shelley asked Steve. Of course. Steve gave Shelley a warm smile as she headed out. Shelley ran back to her North Campus dorm room before it started to rain. She needed to get ready for rush events, followed by a huge party at the Tri-Delta house. Steve acted as Shelley's plus one, a role that he played since high school. She hoped that Jamie would still be available, as it was critical for Shelley to get Jamie's opinion about the dress she planned to wear at the party. To make matters worse, her phone died, so she desperately needed a charger. It was a little past 3:30 p.m., and the dorm hallway was dimly lit. There were periodic rumbles from the thunderstorm brewing outside. As Shelley approached room 1138, something didn't seem right. The door was slightly open. That's odd, Shelley muttered. She then slowly pushed the door. Jamie? There was someone in the room, but it was not Jamie. It was a woman with long dark hair covering her face and pale skin. She wore a white gown. The woman turned straight to Shelley and growled. Shelley screamed in terror and ran as fast as she could down the hallway. The lights began to flicker, and Shelley could still hear the growling from the woman as if she was following her. Not turning her back to see, Shelley quickly ran down the staircase and opened the door to the first floor. On the other side of the door was Tabitha, a resident advisor for the dorm. "Help! Help!" Shelley yelled. "She's after me." Who's after you?" Tabitha questioned and looked around up and up the, down the staircase. "There's no one there. Look." Panting, Shelley hesitated and then turned around to see an empty staircase. Suddenly, there were footsteps. Shelley screamed, "Hey, hey, I'm not that scary." Tom Doyle, a freshman, remarked in sarcastic tone as he waved his hands up in the air and proceeded down the staircase. "What is your name?" Tabitha asked Shelley as she slowly began collecting herself. Shelley Patel from room 1138. "Okay, Shelley, what exactly happened?" Shelley took a deep breath and explained the situation to Tabitha. "I room with my friend Jamie. The door was slightly open and I saw a woman with dark hair and a white gown. She began growling at me. It frightened me and I ran down the stairs." "So you have no idea who this woman is?" Tabitha asked. "Not in the slightest. Also, I didn't see Jamie. I hope she's okay. My phone is dead. I have no idea if she's been trying to call me." Shelley took out her dead phone. "Well, Shelley, let's head to the campus police station and see if they can help." "No, Mrs. Wilson," a young male officer explained. "It's rush week. That naked boy in your yard wasn't trying to invade your home." Officer Julian couldn't help but to snicker as she overheard her colleague on the phone. As the conversation continued, Shelley and Tabitha entered the office. "Hey, Tabitha." Officer Julian smiled as she recognized the RA. "What's going on?" "My name is Shelley Patel," Shelley interjected before Tabitha could speak. "I lived in Swift Tower, room 1138, with my roommate, Jamie Patterson. There was a strange woman who was in our room. She had long dark hair and wore a white gown." Officer Julian's colleague immediately hung up the phone and gave Shelley an inquisitive look. "A woman in white?" he asked. Shelley nodded nervously in agreement. "I'm Officer Scott. So your roommate's name is Jamie Patterson, long dark hair, her boyfriend Mark Stevens?" Shelley and Tabitha looked at each other in amazement as Officer Scott spoke those words. "I used to work for the county sheriff. I had a mishap that involved Jamie and Mark this past summer. It led me to my demotion and assignment here on campus police." Officer Scott rolled his eyes. "So can you help us, Officer Scott?" Shelley asked anxiously. Officer Scott pulled up Shelley and Jamie's records on his computer. "You're in Swift Tower. We have some surveillance footage from the cameras. Officer Julian can look through the last 24 hours of footage. While she does that, let's head back to the room. Who knows? Jamie might still be back, or Jamie may be back as well." It was close to 6 p.m. and the storm had passed. Shelley, Tabitha, and Officer Scott walked down the hallway to the dorm room. The door was wide open. "Wait here," Officer Scott commanded. He walked through the suite, checked each door, looked under each bed, checked the lounge, bathroom, no sign of anyone. "Well," Tabitha asked, "is the coast clear?" "Yeah, come in," Officer Scott shouted. Shelley found her charging cable and was able to glance at her messages. There was a text from Jamie at 3 p.m. "Shell, I'm heading to the library this afternoon. I hope to be back by 5. "Oh no," Shelley exclaimed. "Jamie's text says she should have been back by 5. It's after 6 p.m. Officer Scott's phone rang. It was Officer Julian. He placed her on speakerphone. "Hey, Julian, what did you find?" "You've got to see this in person. You all should get back down here now." The group headed back to the campus police station and found Officer Julian studying the camera footage on her computer. "Hey, this is super weird," Officer Julian explained. "As you can see here, at 3:33 p.m., the door to room 1138 suddenly opens as if on its own. Then around 3:35, we see Shelly enter in and then run out the room and down the hall. But then look what happens. Shelly, based on what you claimed, there should be a woman in white following you. That's not the case. Oh my God, Shelly shouted. That's Jamie. Clipping from the Columbus Dispatch, October 20th, 2017. Information wanted on the whereabouts of Jamie Ann Patterson, 18, who's been missing since October 3rd. She was last seen leaving her dorm at Swift Tower on the OSU campus. Her roommate, Shelly Lynn Patel, 18, witnessed a mysterious woman present at the time Jamie was last seen. The only sign of potential vandalism was Miss Patel's mirror. It was found with a large crack running diagonally through it. So there you go. That is the prologue to Who's Back at the Door. Thoughts.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Ah. I'm really excited. So first of all, it's so fun to revisit these characters. Yeah. And when it became clear that it's kind of centering around Shelly this time, yeah, I was really excited because the actress that played Shelly in Who's at the Door is fantastic. And I kept trying to get her, you know, the part is actually not that big in Who's, yeah, at the Door, but I always wanted more for her, like more parts. Yeah. So that was really exciting. I love how it's set on campus. That's such an exciting time for young people. And I work with sophomores, but I know that energy, that kind of wide-eyed enthusiasm, but excitement and discovering the world. That like the end of the prologue, like where you leave us hanging, is like, that is amazing. I definitely want to read the whole book now. Yeah. And so very good teasing us on, yeah, making us want more.
Thank you. And that's kind of the point. And exactly what I want to do is be able to, in this particular story, revisit some of the characters from Who's at the Door. Some characters who maybe only had small parts, you know, Officer Scott. He was Deputy Scott at the time. He had a small part in Who's at the Door, and now he comes back. And I'm gonna Shelly will have a bigger role. Mark, of course, is gonna have a major role in this as it gets developed. And I'm also looking to even incorporate some of the characters from Parasomnia, and even maybe potentially even from Dollhouse might appear in this story. So I'm really, really excited to kind of revisit this universe. And it's kind of like a universe that I've created, yeah, right? And yeah, but at the same time, you know, I think there's still a lot to be told about the Bloody Mary urban legend, or at least my version of the Bloody Mary urban legend. So thank you for your feedback on this.
I feel so privileged that I'm like one of the first people to hear it out loud ever.
Exactly. And so what I plan to do is I'm hoping that I'll get this finished by the end of 2023 with either a winter 2023 release or early 2024 release. But of course, be loving to have members of Floor 5 take this on as a podcast audio drama in the future too.
It would be such an honor. Please, yes, I'm already saying let's do it.
No problem. And thank you, audience, for listening to this episode of Things That Go Bump in the Night. So sorry it's taken so long to create a new episode, but it was worth the wait, I tell you that. So thank you again. Thank you again to Ellen, my guest here on this episode. And thank you, IMP Studios, for hosting us, and we look forward to seeing you soon. Bye.